Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The Bring Chicago Home referendum was officially defeated, but counting continues in the Cook County State's attorney race that's getting tighter and tighter. Plus, the city announces plans to close shelters housing migrants at 5 parks with the intention of restoring park activities. I checked in on the latest primary election results and happenings at City Hall with WBEZ City Government and Politics reporter Tessa Weinberg. And we start with the latest numbers in the race for state's attorney. Here's Tessa.
They have not stopped. You know, they're constantly adding more mail ballots that they've been counting, thousands.
Yeah,
they've been going
like biting my nails on Saturday and Sunday as the numbers were coming in.
Every night, you know, I've been pulling up the PDF, checking where things stand. But so the addition of all those mail ballots has really narrowed, O'Neill Burke's lead over Harris. Last week, there was some 10,000 votes separating them. And now it's a little over 2,000. It's much, much closer.
That's tight.
O'Neill Burke, as of last night, was at 50.2% of the vote, whereas Clayton Harris was at 49.8%. And so there's still mail ballots to be counted from both the city and the county. In the city, there's nearly 47,000 Democratic primary mail ballots still outstanding.
Okay.
And the board doesn't expect to have all those returned, but, you know, with this being so close, I think folks are really, you know, waiting to see and have this play out.
Every vote really counts.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
There was a bit of surprise on Saturday. Max Bever, who's the spokesperson for the Chicago Board of Elections, he announced that about 10,000 votes were added to the official count. I mean, what happened there?
Yeah, so this was a communications error. There had been mail-in ballots that had been received last Monday that hadn't been reflected just in the numbers that were being reported out. It wasn't that there necessarily had been suddenly, you know, new ballots discovered and added, but more of a communications error that the board has apologized for. Those ballots were still securely housed at the Board of Elections headquarters.
Okay.
And they've already been, you know, processed. They're showing up in these results received. Seeing both sides of the campaigns of the state's attorney's race, you know, were urging, you know, they didn't suspect there was foul play, and that's been a transparent process.
Good
and
to hear.
Urging folks to, you know, let the process play out.
Do we have any idea who those ballots happened to favor, though?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen a specific breakdown from that bunch, but I think it's probably fair to say that, you know, they're part of, you know, what has been now slowly narrowing this gap in favor of Harris, as we've seen those mail ballots really tighten that race.
And 2,000 more will be counted today.
Yeah, that's what the Board of Elections said of those outstanding mail ballots, about 2,000 or so counted today. And then overall, there's still, I think it's over 54,000 outstanding mail ballots total. And, you know, the deadline, I believe, is April 2nd. We could still be seeing this trickling in and the board continuing to slowly count things as they come back.
Another little over a week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we saw another race also in its final stages this weekend with the Bring Chicago Home referendum finally being called. So give us the official numbers, Tessa, and the factors that you think contributed to this ultimate defeat.
Yeah, so we finally had an official race call Friday night, from the Associated Press. The Board of Elections had added some more mail ballots, and the AP called it shortly after at 6 p.m. The numbers as of Sunday night that are a little more recent than that, the no votes were leading with 52.3% of the vote, whereas the supporters, the yes camp, they had narrowed their gap, but they were still trailing at 47.7% of the vote. So it wasn't enough to overtake opponents. And, you know, I think some of it was we did see low voter turnout overall. While I think folks expected that to maybe benefit supporters who had a strong ground game. They were going knocking doors, very similar to how they elected, you know, Mayor Johnson.
Right.
It didn't really play out that way. And, you know, it was a complicated just issue.
It was.
Itself.
And then it was in court limbo for a while. There was a week or so when the referendum was declared invalid by a judge. I mean, do you think that may have had some sort of, you know, effect on the final vote?
Yeah, I think it's hard to know how exactly, but I'm sure the confusion didn't help things. And, you know, even the city council's progressive caucus today put out a statement saying, you know, perhaps there is also just sentiment of voters, you know, not necessarily trusting the government or the city, and just that sentiment overall maybe playing out into why people didn't want to, you know, authorize this and let the city handle this new revenue.
Yeah, and if you look geographically too, Tessa, that spread of yes versus no votes, I mean, that was telling in itself,
definitely.
Right? Definitely. You've got the South and West sides overwhelmingly voting for the referendum, while the North side was mostly voting against it. New data from WBEZ sort of mapped the votes by precincts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You see a majority of, you know, renters versus homeowners, right? So areas with more renters, they had the higher percentage of people's voting yes, and then the areas with mostly homeowners voting no. I mean, does that suggest anything to you about the overall messaging from this campaign?
Yeah, I think those were super interesting takeaways from our data team. You know, like you mentioned, they found that the homeowner heavy precincts, you know, were opposing the measure, which I think kind of makes sense. Those are the folks that were going to be bearing this tax directly compared to, you know, renters who, while maybe there was talk about they would get raised rents and trickle down, wouldn't be the ones, you know, actually paying for this. But it was interesting too, some of those other takeaways from that precinct level data was that areas that supported Johnson during his runoff election that elected a mayor, it wasn't necessarily given that they would support Bring Chicago Home. Areas that did, it was kind of in smaller amounts. So I think it was interesting as we've seen opponents kind of frame this as this was also a referendum on Mayor Johnson's time in office so far. And that, you know, it makes sense that the areas that opposed the measure also just saw higher turnout. They were the ones that went out.
Yeah, speaking of Mayor Johnson, while all of this was happening, the city council also held its first hearing on another of his planned development efforts. Now, this was his proposal to borrow over $1 billion for affordable housing as well as economic development. What exactly is he proposing?
Yeah, so $1.25 billion he's pitching borrowing over the course of 5 years to fund affordable housing, economic development. This is kind of his big signature first plan we've really seen from him to fund this, and it really relies on letting controversial tax increment financing or TIF districts expire and then taking some of that recaptured revenue to finance this borrowing plan. City officials estimate that the expiring TIF districts will lead to $2.2 billion in additional revenue over the course of the next 15 years. And then the debt for this plan, though, over the course of 37 years would cost about $2.4 billion. And so last week, we had the first kind of hearing before alderpersons where they really dug into this plan, and we saw Johnson administration officials really kind of have to defend it and answer some of those questions.
Well, let's jump to some other news here. I teased earlier that we got some breaking news this morning. Word came out that the city plans to close 5 temporary shelters at city parks that are housing migrants. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, so beginning Saturday, the mayor's office announced that 5 of these shelters at these parks are going to start to be winding down. Folks will be moved out to other nearby shelters. And the city, you know, stressing they're going to try and prioritize keeping folks nearby where they're already staying, that CPS students will be expected to remain in the same school. And by a quick tally, about 830 people or so will be affected, and that was based off of data from March 15th from the City Council's Committee on Immigrant and Refugee Rights that has some of these, you know, shelter census data.
How many people?
About 830. And that was from earlier this month. So the total number, you know, as of today, may be a little bit different. But from what was publicly available, that was about the number.
I mean, what'll happen to them?
Yeah. And so the city says folks are going to be moved to other currently, you know, operating shelters. They're going to prioritize keeping folks, you know, nearby where they're already staying. But I'm sure, you know, volunteers and advocates will be keeping a close watch about, you know, how this plays out, how it's communicated to folks. So
yeah. And any updates on other folks that were evicted from city run shelters in the last week or so?
Yeah. So this is coming at the same time as the city's resumed these evictions. And as of this morning, the city said a total of 24 people have been, you know, required to leave city shelters under this new policy where folks can't stay longer than 60 days. And we have about 66 people who are waiting currently for a spot in shelter. And overall, there's a little over 10,500 people staying in shelter right now.
Wow. There was a press release from the city that it sort of detailed the intention to I guess the why, right, is they're trying to transition the park buildings back to being for park-related activities, right? What does that entail exactly? And also tell us the 5 parks, if you've got a list there.
Yeah, this will be now, you know, these parks are going to, you know, be able to have summer programming the summer. It's Gage Park, Broadway Armory Park, Brands Park, Leon Park, and Piotrowski Park. And these were, you know, last year after Mayor Johnson took office, he announced, you know, some of these would start to be used as shelters. It is interesting, these are city-owned spaces, so the city's probably saving some money by using those, and so we'll be seeing those go away. But the city at the same time has been seeing a downturn in the number of folks arriving. Mm-hmm. So they probably are trying to wind down as many shelters as they can. But they've also, you know, Johnson's own administration has warned head of the DNC. They expect, you know, politics to come into play and more right. folks to even be sent. So I think, you know, it remains to be seen, you know, is this contracting now going right. to put the city in a tough position later? Is based on what they're forecasting, is this prudent? And it's, I think it's hard to know when things change so quickly.
And we know there was some opposition to folks being put in these shelters in the first place, right? There were residents who complained that they would no longer have access mm-hmm. to their parks. So, I mean, I know it doesn't feel like it, but it is spring. Mm-hmm. Summer's right. around the corner. I mean, is this maybe a strategic move by the administration to try to get more public support?
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure, you know, residents, you know, who've been missing out maybe on some of their program at these parks are eager to see it back. But I think it'll be, you know, it's hard to know where will we stand come summer. Are we going to have to be eyeing, looking back at using some of these spaces again if we see, you know, a large amount of people suddenly in need of shelter?
Right.
And so I think, yeah, we'll have to see how it goes.
That's WBEZ City Government and Politics reporter Tessa Weinberg. Thank you so much, Tessa.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of the Reset podcast was produced by Jules Yeager and Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmed and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. To hear more conversations about local politics and government, make sure to subscribe and head over to wbez.org/reset for a full archive of our interviews. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.